beef without the moo, fish without the fins, chicken without the feathers. People are rushing in from all over to Silicon Valley with the ideas of producing fake meat, and venture capital is rushing to meet them. So today we pause to ask, will fake meat grow into a real meat industry?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Thank you, Will Strickland, and hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,103rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Acadalia who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, I welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strubia on the boards. Jason, I have a quick question for you.
All right, I love
Have
question.
You ever taken the life of an animal with the prospect of eating it in mind?
Never.
Never have. Well, Bella Hedke is here, our University of California intern. Bella, have you ever taken the life of a critter with the thought of eating it in mind?
Well, I grew up in Northern California, and I definitely have.
And you definitely have?
Yeah, I grew up hunting, so.
Okay, good. Well, folks, there it is. Have you taken the life of an animal to eat? You know, the geography of the San Francisco's Bay Area's Silicon Valley is defined by ideas and money. The valley grows by turning ideas like the transistor, computer, internet into really big money. One idea now seeking Silicon Valley's venture capital is fake meat. Beef without the moo, fish without the fins, chicken without the feathers. The idea of fake meat is getting a lot of money. The Impossible Food Company has been given $200 million and is building a factory in Oakland to produce veggie burgers that bleed. Modern Meadow has been given $53 million to culture leather cells in a petri dish. Or a vat, or something. And Finless Foods have been funded by biotech accelerator IndieBio to incubate bluefin tuna fillets, and so on, and so on, and so on. Meat is a $200 billion a year business in the United States, and so today we pause with the San Francisco Chronicle to ask, will fake meat grow into a real meat industry? And here to help us guide the way, we have a couple of San Francisco Chronicle staff writers. They put out an incredible piece, a special report, What is Meat? And so today we welcome first Tara Duggan, who is one of the staff writers. Tara, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks so much for having us.
Got you aboard. Good. And also with us, Jonathan Kaufman. Jonathan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for both, and thanks for a nice piece of work. Producer Bella and I have been working on a fake meat story, and you came out with this incredible piece, and I thought, well, there it is. And we had two people who have actually done a lot of work to get the information, so we're really grateful to have you aboard today. First, a little bit about yourselves. Tara, I know that you are a genuine foodie, right?
I guess so. I don't know if I call myself that, but I've been a food writer for a long time, and I do a lot of research on all types of food, mm-hmm. food issues.
And you were a graduate of the Culinary Institute, I understand?
The California Culinary Academy, that's right.
So you studied preparing foods, and from there you went into writing about foods, and now you have a career in foods, I guess, right?
That's right.
Good. Jonathan, what about you? How did you become involved in writing about food?
Well, I started off as a cook in my 20s in restaurants in San Francisco, and then I became a restaurant critic. And I was a restaurant critic for about 11 years before I switched over to writing more feature stories about food producers and restaurants.
You know, that would be an interesting story in itself, being a restaurant critic.
It was an interesting job.
I bet you could get yourself in a lot of trouble doing that, right?
Nobody tried to kill me or poison me. So
no dead horses on your front porch, or you know, no dead horse heads in your front porch or anything.
No,
like that.
Nope.
Well, okay, good. Let's go to our story. What is meat? And you opened your piece with a very interesting piece. What is meat? And that's a big project you took on. There were 13 staff writers. What led you folks to take on the subject? Let's start with you, Tara.
Well, both Jonathan and I have been, you know, we are staff writers at the Chronicle covering food, and both of us have been interested in some of the new developments happening around, for example, more people being interested in plant-based eating, as it's often called, or reducing their meat consumption, or of course, outright stopping meat consumption and becoming vegans or vegetarians.
Like our producer, Jason Struby here.
All right, yes. And so that's a growing demographic and interest, and although it's, you know, full-on vegetarianism is still pretty small, but more and more people are interested in eating less meat and fewer animal products.
So there's certainly that side of it.
Interesting to see.
You know, the other side of it, of course, is that you're right there in Silicon Valley. Jonathan, what the heck is Silicon Valley anyway?
That is a good question. It's almost a state of mind more than it is a geographic area at this point, because so much of it is spread into San Francisco. We ask ourselves a lot, like, what makes a food like a food tech versus a consumer food product, and why are some of these companies like Impossible Foods, which is the veggie burger that bleeds, you know, why are they marketing themselves to venture capitalists who normally fund companies like Twitter and Microsoft and Yahoo and Facebook, instead of, you know, going after the kind of traditional funding that builds food brands?
Yeah, like Kraft Foods or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems to be an entirely new approach to food.
It is, yeah. And I think the way they tend to be presenting themselves, and recognizing that there's a lot of money in venture capital right now in San Francisco or in the Bay Area, they're presenting the idea of meat eating and the need to develop meat alternatives as a major social challenge that can be surmounted or addressed by technological solutions. So
Go ahead.
Oh, they're selling the sort of the high tech approach that they're using, each of these companies is, to making meat alternatives.
Tara, what do you think about the way conventional food businesses look at these high tech startups that are producing meat without the meat, I guess?
Well, it is interesting because you're seeing certain big food companies like Tyson have investment funds for new, you know, for technology around food, because they recognize this is a long-term approach to solving some issues in the food system. They also see the interest in consumers growing around these kind of new, you know, technologies, and also around plant-based foods. So, but there's also a backlash as well. One of the stories that I worked on recently was about the what's called the Dairy Pride Act, which is a bill in the Senate to prevent plant-based foods from using dairy terms like milk and cheese, because they think that that's unfair to the, you know, actual dairy industry.
And I think you really saw that with soy, right?
Yeah. Sorry?
You really saw that with White Wave and soy milk?
I mean, it's been an issue in the past, but I think now the big food companies are recognizing that there's more market share going to these other types of alternatives, and I think it's a combination of they're very concerned about that because they see it as a threat, but then they also recognize at the same time that there's some potential business opportunities too. So it's kind of it's interesting to see how they kind of work both angles.
So they're kind of looking at it as a disruptive technology, and they could be the ones getting disrupted.
Exactly, but they also don't want to miss out on the possibility that, you know, there could be some money. So I think Tyson has invested, I have a fund that's about $150 million that includes investments in, I believe, Impossible Foods is one of, or maybe it's Beyond Meat's the other newer plant-based company.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Food Chain Radio program. When we come back, the Chronicle opened up its special report with a really interesting question, which is, what is meat? And so we'll ask Jonathan Kaufman and Tara Duggan when we come back, what the heck is meat? We thought we knew, didn't we? For a long time, we thought that meat was that flesh that came from animals, fish and animals, and that's what we ate and we still eat. But wait a minute. Is that what meat really is? Do stay tuned. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, 831-479-1080. If you care to participate, we will be right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro farm it. Dream easy, you can.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Just think about it. Beef without the moo, fish without the fins, chicken without the feathers. Oh, my goodness. All kinds of possibilities open up in this brave new world of fake meat that is being funded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars by venture capitalists, many of which, of course, are in San Francisco Bay Area's Silicon Valley. San Francisco Chronicle would have a special report. What is meat? What a great question to start. What exactly is meat? You folks spend a lot of time on it. Jonathan, I'll start with you.
It's still a question I'm trying to answer. I do think that, I think there's something about the taste of meat as well as the texture of meat that people gravitate to. So, I think, there's something that a lot of the soy products really can't replicate. Which is that sort of huge umami, which is that feeling
umami.
Of savoriness.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the soy and wheat alternatives and pea as well are pea alternatives.
Yeah, but are they meat?
Yeah. Are they meat? I don't know if I would call them meat. I don't know if a lot of the people who buy them think they're meat either.
Okay.
I think maybe they want to be saying they're eating meat.
Right.
Yeah, they probably want to be calling them meat alternatives.
Tara, what do you think?
Well, one of the reasons we posed the question, what is meat, is because in this project, we looked at plant-based meat alternatives, but especially the newer ones that, like we were saying, use a lot of technology to recreate some of the flavor and texture and even color of meat. But we also looked at some even newer technologies that are emerging also in the Bay Area. That, for example, there's lab-grown meat where, you know, you use cells and you replicate the, you basically create muscle through, in the lab rather than on the farm. And so that, you know, is that meat or is it not? It's actually going to be a vegan, in many ways, a vegan product because it, depending on how you consider it, because it's not.
Wait a minute. How can meat grown in a Petri dish be vegan? How does that work?
Because it depends on how you define vegan, but it is doesn't kill the animal. There's no animal, you know. And I'm not saying that vegans will want to eat this food. In fact, most of this food is not aimed toward vegetarians or vegans. It's aimed toward carnivores. So the idea is to create meat in a more sustainable and humane and, you know,
okay,
way that so that's the big question. Is that meat or is it not? You know, and is that vegetarian or is it not? It's just sort of changing the game, right? And yeah. There's also
Well, did you folks at the Cron offer an answer?
I don't think we did.
Clever.
Man, so we posed $1 million question and we didn't even answer it.
That's a smart thing to be doing, I think. You put a good question like that on the table and away we go. Well, there's two kinds of fake meat, right? There's the fake meat that is made up of vegetables that resemble meat, and then there's the fake meat of the cultured cell. So let's take each one of them. Tara, you picked up on the vegetable matter. You talked about New Wave Company and their plant-based shrimp. What exactly are we talking about when we talk about making vegetables look and taste like meat?
Yeah, in the case of, you know, I think we're all used to, of course, veggie burgers and garden burgers where, you know, there's a lot of oats and vegetables, and it's clearly not trying to be meat. It's trying to sort of fill that role on the plate, but it's not. You know, I don't think anyone's trying to pretend anything necessarily. But in these newer examples, like the shrimp, they're actually trying to make it look and taste and have the texture of shrimp, so that it can really be. I guess the way they see it is it's going to really replicate that experience of eating shrimp in a much more visceral way. We tried it at the Chronicle. These are shrimp that really do look quite a bit like shrimp. You can see photos in our, mm-hmm. in our package online. They actually use a mold to pour it's basically like a batter made of a combination of plant-based foods, including some algae products, which, you know.
Give it the fishy taste.
Well, they also have the fishy taste also comes from an actual flavoring agent, which does taste pretty mm-hmm. much like shrimp. The texture is the issue I'm getting ahead of myself. So they pour this mixture. It has protein from pea protein, and as opposed to soy. And then it has a few other products, but it has no allergens. It's all plants. It has a little bit of natural coloring from lycopene, which is from tomato. So it has even little veins, kind of like a shrimp, and it's the shape of a shrimp because they make it in a mold that looks like a shrimp.
So in essence, it's a kind of fake meat that uses vegetable matters of various kinds, put them all in a big pot, stir them up, pour them in a mold, and voila, it looks just like a shrimp.
You could tell it's not a real shrimp, but it's pretty, you know, pretty convincing. They also make a battered one that, obviously you can't really tell the difference because it's got a fried coating on it.
Sure.
I know they're really, really trying to make, they really want to make shrimp of shrimp-like texture, which is, if you think about shrimp, that is one of the more important things when you eat a shrimp, right? It's kind of like a crisp and juicy experience, right? This isn't quite there yet. But they're working on it, so we'll see. I don't know if it's possible to really make that with plants.
Okay, Jonathan, you took the other side of the coin, talking about fake meat that is cultured from the cells of animals. Mm-hmm. How the heck does that work?
Well, there have been folks who have been looking at this idea and talking about it almost speculatively.
We've been doing that with plants forever, haven't we? You know, we can take a cell of a plant, put it into a petri dish, and then culture clones of that plant.
Yeah, but this research is almost piggybacking off of research into stem cells and the research into, you know, in the medical field of looking at growing human organs. So it's taking some of those same technologies and acculturing muscle, fat, and connective tissue cells from they've started with beef, but also chicken and duck and fish. And they had their first success. The first research team to have their success was in 2013. They were a group in the Netherlands who created the first lab-grown hamburger that apparently cost, you know, close to $300,000 to produce. Since then, there have been smaller companies, newer companies who are also getting into the field, who are bringing the cost down and also, you know, testing out different kinds of meats and different structures.
And how? What do single cells eat in the petri dish?
Well, that has been, I'm not exactly sure of all of that because they can be, these companies can be pretty secretive about their technology. One of the main, I guess, ingredients in the feed has been traditionally something called fetal bovine serum, which is what it's taken from, you know, fetal cows. And so this company that's located in San Leandro called, Memphis Meats has come up with the first vegetarian alternative feed, which really will speed along the process, make it cheaper, and also make it technically vegan, because they won't be using an animal product, you know, taken from slaughtered animals to grow animal cells.
But it will be produced in fetal amniotic fluid?
I think it's something replicating fetal amniotic fluid, I guess.
Okay. Well, on that, we'll take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today, we're talking about fake meat of Silicon Valley, a huge new industry funded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, trying to figure out how to make fake meat that we will buy. And that's the question, we will buy. Let's talk a little bit about those venture capitalists and what they see as opportunity. Do you see opportunity?
Sure.
831-479-1080. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, think of it. Meat without the moo, fish without the fins, chicken without the feathers. Oh, my goodness. Folks, Silicon Valley is a place. I don't even know if it's a place anymore. But it's where ideas go to meet money. One of the ideas going to Silicon Valley right now is the idea of fake meat. Meat without the animal, I reckon. And Silicon Valley's venture capitalists are really loving the idea because they're putting hundreds of millions of dollars into the business. So the San Francisco Chronicle put together an incredible piece, a special report on what is meat, and they went to Silicon Valley, which is pretty much everywhere around the San Francisco Bay Area. Let's ask them, Tara Duggan and Jonathan Kaufman, what they saw and what they learned when they talked to venture capitalists. Tara, let's start with you. What do they tell you that they see in fake meat that they love?
Well, one of the big issues is, of course, environmental issues surrounding meat production and trying to solve that, trying to reduce that impact and come up with some solutions. There's a real concern about not just from a purely altruistic point of view.
That's what I was going to ask you, Tara. I mean, venture capitalists are altruistic, I'm sure, but I think they're really out there to make money.
Well, I think they're really out there to kind of get ahead of where the meat industry, they see the meat industry going because of these environmental issues. So it's not just to sort of do it out of the goodness of their heart, although a lot of these, a lot of the entrepreneurs we talk to are vegetarians, and so they have a personal interest. But on the other hand, they're looking at meat prices going up, feed prices going up. There are also issues around, the population exploding around the world, and there just really isn't enough room on the world to produce all the meat that people want to eat. And there are countries like China that are eating a lot more animal protein than it used to, India as well, as those you know, their economies improve, there's more of a demand. And there it is, and meat, animal-based meat is a limited resource. One of the big sources of feed for farmed animals is wild fish from the ocean. And we all know wild fish are not in very good shape. So it's a sense that, like, eventually this is going to become a necessity, not just that it, so, you know, they see it that way.
So the sense is that because of the cost to the environment of feeding people animal flesh, then we have to figure out different ways of doing this. You mentioned the ethics of growing meat, and I'm sure ethics is a big concern for all vegans and vegetarians. But Bella had an interesting question she brought up with respect to the ethics of the process. Bella?
Well, you pretty much covered it. Just generally, is it ethical? I mean, a lot of people are calling it clean meat because it doesn't have to kill an entire animal for you to eat a burger. But as you said earlier that they are cultured in bovine fluid. And would a vegan generally consider that?
Well, no, that's how they have been produced, but this local company has come up with a vegetarian alternative.
Right, they're moving it away from
that. They say it won't be, it's cost prohibitive until they can create a vegetarian version of that. That's the only way they can scale up.
So that's Memphis Meats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about Memphis Meats.
Memphis Meats was started in 2015 by a cardiologist from the University of Minnesota named Uma Valetti. Uma and a couple other scientists got together, and they had looked through the science. They came up with their plan. Uma's thought was that it wasn't just about the ethics of, you know, there's this idea about, you know, the ethics of slaughtering an animal versus the ethics of growing meat cells in the lab. But he said what he's not trying to supplant the small family farms that are growing, they're growing steer on pasture, you know, and all the sort of the ways that the sustainable food movement likes to think about meat and promote meat. He's going after the factory farming, which is, he says, you know, represents 99% of meat production around the world.
And it has very few friends.
Yeah, yes.
No, but nobody's standing up to speak for the factory farm industry.
Right.
So if you can say, I'm going to supplant factory farms, you're going to be, okay, people are going to listen to you and think a lot of you then. Pay attention to you. Yeah.
One of their thoughts is that, you know, I mean, people eat meat despite the way it's produced, not because of the way it's produced.
Ah, there you go. Let's turn back to the venture capitalist. Tara, how exactly does venture capital work?
You know, that is not my field of expertise. I'm a food writer.
Okay.
So,
well, let me ask you this. These companies come in and give, you know, these companies tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to, you know, to grow fish or without the fins and chicken without the feathers. And how do they make money?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So these companies, some of them are getting, you know, more like in the tens of millions only, but or even hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment. And what they're doing is they're starting out. This is, and it's good to clarify that a lot of these companies are still very much in pre-production. There's very little on the market yet that we've talked about, although the plant-based foods like the shrimp that we talked about made out of plants is coming onto the market actually probably next year. But, or it's actually going into food service this year, so it is on the market. But a lot of these are still in very much in the lab stage. In fact, several of the companies we talked about are at the same office building in San Leandro, right in the Bay Area, because they're all being funded by one particular fund, which is called IndieBio. And they're all kind of working together because a lot of them have science backgrounds. So right now is very much in the research phase. And then, like, as Jonathan pointed out, you know, that first lab-grown burger costs whatever, $300,000 for one burger. Obviously, that's not a very, good business investment. But the idea is once they can figure out how to get to scale, and then they start actually moving forward, they get newer rounds of investment and eventually, a broader package, because then people can start actually making money.
And with respect to the veggie side of producing food, there is a company now. What's the company that's making veggie burgers that bleed?
Impossible Foods.
Yeah, so they're gearing up for production, aren't they?
Right. They're building a factory in Oakland right now that should open up in the next couple of years. They have products on the market, but they have for the past year, but they've limited them to small high-end restaurants for two reasons. One is to build cachet, and the other is because they just don't have enough to release into the retail market, and so they figured they'd go after a few restaurants who could show off their product.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, going to the phones, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. What would you call fake meat besides fake meat? Got a name for it? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Tara and Jonathan from The Chronicle. Right back.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best Liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what do you think out there, folks? Will fake meat grow into a real meat industry? That was a question put on the table in a special report by the San Francisco Chronicle. Staff writers Tara Duggan and Jonathan Kaufman joined here with us today discussing that subject. Also, we have you. Let's pick up Rory, who always has a good question or a good comment. Welcome aboard, Rory.
All right. Well, thank you. And I think the answer is no. I think it'll be always a boutique little thing for vegetarians. This is about the most unappetizing food chain show I've ever heard, Michael. I must say, I can't wait to grill up a big old steak of artificial meat and sink my teeth into it.
Well,
anyway.
Well, wait a minute, Rory. Let me come back to you.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be great if the company you work for example, could come up with a fake strawberry?
No.
And you could grow the fake strawberry.
It's hard enough to grow a regular strawberry. Why complicate it?
Well, what if you could make it easier?
Nah. Well, we're making it as easy as possible. To make a fake or an artificial just complicates. I mean, but at any rate, I always hear that the big environmental damage of meat production. Please, somebody explain. And I don't want to hear about methane causing runaway climate disasters and, diesel used on farm equipment to produce forage crops or whatever the case may be as being a problem, because that's an imagined problem. What is the problem with raising herbivores on greens and selling that to willing buyers? And the other thing, remember, is in India, they don't eat cows. So I don't know what protein they're eating over. They've got pretty strict dietary requirements for their religious beliefs. But, why should people in emerging economies be denied protein?
I don't know, but we'll ask Jonathan and Tara. Jonathan, how would you respond? First of all,
sure.
Rory made a real interesting comment with respect to the distaste, the idea of, ew, eating meat from a petri dish, ew.
I have to say that was my original impression when I started researching the piece, and after talking to them and talking about what they want to achieve, and again, this is 5 to 10 years and you know, ahead, looking at things like the cultured meat. To me, I think, and I think to the founders, there's nothing wrong with growing an animal on grass, and you know, growing animals in the most sustainable way, and eating
that's
the meat
fine.
That
that's
there.
1% of the market, right? You can have
sure.
that. We'll take the 99% of the market.
That I think they're in order to make that the default these days, with the growing population, the growing demand for meat, you'd have to, at least in America, you'd have to change a lot of the regulations. It's not clear whether we'd have enough land to produce all of that that meat sustainably and affordably. And what these companies are looking at is I mean, it's a deeply capitalist response. You know, it's using industry in order to feed, you
sure.
know, produce
sure.
food. But it is they're trying to enter into the market that already exists and not try to you know, completely revamp the grocery system, the food system, in order to produce better meat.
Okay, good. Let's go to Dorothy. Dorothy, welcome to the Food Chain. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Dorothy Hensinger.
Go ahead.
I've been on plant food for 2 years now. I'm 87, and the Dr. Marcus is teaching this, and he has quite a few doctors teaching plant protein, and I feel marvelous. I'm much healthier at 87 than I was before, and I don't think we need meat. I'm long fine. My blood tests are perfect. My bones are okay. So I think we could just let that go.
Well, tell
us how we don't have to make artificial meat. I don't think we need to make artificial anything. We just eat plants.
You know, that's a great comment, Dorothy. Tara, what about the notion of why bothering making fake meat when you could? If people want to eat vegetables, well, hand them a carrot and there it is. Why fake meat?
Right. Well, that's a really good question. And one of the interesting things is that, you know, most vegetarians I talk to have no interest in fake meat. They don't want it something to taste like meat. They don't like that. I think the issue is that only something like 3 to 5% of Americans, for example, are vegetarian. That number is growing. For example, I've seen one statistic that half of the vegans are millennials. So we might see a change, but so in other words, it's not really geared toward vegetarians. It's geared toward the reality that this is how they see it. Most people are meat eaters, but there isn't enough meat for the planet. I'm not saying they're going to be necessarily successful in convincing people to eat this instead of meat. It's just that's where they see an opportunity.
You know, I think they're going to be successful because I think most of you talked about the millennials being vegetarians. Most people now, as Jonathan wrote in your piece, most people have no connection at all to food anymore other than the fact that we cook it. We buy it from the supermarket. But most of the food now comes all packaged up and pretty. And it's simply a matter of selling a story.
Hold on to that.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you can respond to my notion that we city folks simply do not know about food anymore. And therefore, we can be talked into eating just about anything. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, Tara Duggan, and Jonathan Kaufman of the San Francisco Chronicle, and you. We will be right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends, do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy it'll make you blush. Pledge 2 local bucks each day. Get 2 others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at MetroFarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what do you think? Will fake meat grow into a real meat industry that has been the subject of a 1,103rd edition of this Food Chain radio program? Also the subject of a great piece in the San Francisco Chronicle special report. With us today from the Chronicle, Tara Duggan and Jonathan Kaufman. Ask you the tough question. Do you think we can be talked into eating just about anything? And if we can, I see this fake meat industry becoming hugely successful. Jonathan, let's start with you.
Well, I agree with you. Actually, I was there's a young scientist at the university at a university in Florida who did a survey of 3,000 of his classmates, where he explained what cultured meat was, and he said if we can assure you that this is safe, that it's affordable, and it tastes just like meat, would you eat it? Or would you try it? And 60% said yes.
And I think
those are the three things that the industry is going to have to guarantee, that it's, you know, that it's safe, affordable, and taste and looks just like meat.
Tara, do you think they'll come up with a good story to sell us?
Well, it's a real that's one of the reasons we did this project, because it is such a tough sell, as our callers have indicated. And, you know, if you take apart any type of food production that involves meat, it's not going to sound pretty, right? If we talked about the details of growing and killing...
Well, if we talked about what it was like to grow food in industrial factory farms, one of the...
Or even in a so-called sustainable farm, you know, if you talk about killing animals, that's not pretty. People don't want to talk about that. So... the tough thing is always, how do they explain it? How do they overcome people's fear of the unknown? But really, it has to taste good. I mean, I think that's what everyone recognizes, that you can't compete with a burger that tastes really good if your product doesn't taste as good. And that's really, you can't just appeal to people's interest in the environment. That's not enough. It hasn't proven to be enough. So they're going to have to make it taste good.
So they have to get the taste in. But once they do figure that out, then all they have to do is get like a movie star or a rock star or something, and away you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, get a few early adapters, right?
Yeah, and there you go. Let's go to, I think we have Jim on the line. Jim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. I see a real... opportunity testing in processed foods, and especially when they're being served in an institutional setting. would like to mention that livestock production is a good way to manage land, money that is made from the meat and byproducts. Animals is a way you're either going to have methane from.
Well, we can't quite complete that argument, Jim, because we can't quite get your cell phone to connect or whatever kind of phone it was. That being said, we're almost all out of time as well. But we do want to ask Tara and Jonathan how we can tune into their piece on the internet somehow.
We have the package online. Go on.
It's actually really easy to find if you go to sfchronicle.com/meat.
There it is. Jonathan Kaufman, Tara Duggan, thank you so much for joining us on the Food Chain. Thank you all for tuning in. What do you think? Log on metrofarm.com and answer the question.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.